This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. After all the campaign speeches, debates, and polls, we're just 4 days away from the voters starting to have their say in the race for the White House. The Iowa caucuses are Monday, followed by the New Hampshire primary the following week. And joining us to look at the presidential race and political news of the day, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Ken, we always eagerly await this every month. We just have to know, what is that trivia question today?
Yes.
Wait. Before we do that, I am so excited about this show. This is such an exciting time for being a political junkie.
Yeah.
There's so much in the news, and my goodness, I'm so glad today you're having a 3-hour Cincinnati edition.
Yeah. Let's just roll. Yeah, we can keep rolling.
Our producer just keeled over. No, he's actually saying, "Go right ahead. Be my guest."
Sure. Well, so, the trivia question is a good one. This is a great one. Nelson Rockefeller has received more cumulative votes for governor than any Republican in history. He got over 12 million votes running for governor. Third place is Jim Rhodes of Ohio. He got nearly 9 million votes.
And that's among Republicans, right?
Yeah.
Among Republican governors, right. Republicans running for governor. Jim Rhodes is in third place. Rockefeller's in first place. Who's in second place? That's the question.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
Try looking that one up.
Yeah, Google that, I dare you.
Second place.
Well, if you think you know the answer to that, or if you even just want to take a wild guess, who knows, you might be right. Give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct answer will win a political junkie button. 513-419-7100. And Ken, you're right. It's a perfect time to be a political junkie with all that's going on. I mean, you have the Republican debate tonight. And what kind of an impact will that debate have this close to the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary? Is this going to change anyone's minds?
Well, the follow-up question, obviously, is what effect does Donald Trump skipping the debate what effect that will have?
Yeah.
And that's a good question, because Trump, of course, is used to getting his way, and he demanded that Megyn Kelly, not his favorite Fox personality, not be the moderator of the debate, given what happened with their debate last August. And he says, I'm not showing up if Megyn Kelly is the moderator. And Fox News said, well, too bad, Megyn Kelly is the moderator. So he's going to do his own little event near Drake University and see what happens. But it's interesting that the polls have been very close. Ted Cruz, for the most part, has had a lead for the last couple of weeks. But now there's indications that either because Donald Trump has criticized Ted Cruz for being born in Canada, which is kind of funny because, Trump was born on Neptune, but nobody seems to complain about that. but also the fact that, you know, that Cruz is not a big fan of subsidies for ethanol, which is sacrosanct in Iowa. And also Terry Branstad, the Republican governor of Iowa, has really criticized Ted Cruz, saying it would be a disaster for the state if he won. So Trump now seems to have this little lead. He won't be in the debate tonight. Cruz may have the floor to himself, but of course there are seven other Republicans yapping at his heels.
You know, I mean, if Trump is not there, it takes away kind of a easy target for people like Cruz and others on the stage. I mean, it's not that they won't talk about him, but, you know, he won't have to take the hits and he won't have to answer.
Yes, but he always takes the hits. He always seems to have a very bizarre answer. He never seems to have complete understanding of the issues. And yet, after every debate, his numbers go up.
Yeah, you know, and I've heard some people say, Ken, you know, brilliant political move by Trump. I've heard other people say, you know, it's not so brilliant. And I just kind of wonder if this doesn't go along with his comment about that he made, I think it was last week, where he said, I could shoot somebody on the street and it wouldn't hurt my poll numbers.
Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and I wouldn't lose a vote.
And that's probably the one truthful thing he said the entire campaign.
Probably so. What does this do for the other candidates that are going to be on this stage?
The good news for Rand Paul, remember he's still running for president.
He made the cut this time.
Yeah, he made the cut. He's now on the center stage. And the odd thing is that Jim Gilmore, Happy Gilmore, the former governor of Virginia, who has not been in any of the debates, now gets elevated to the Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, Carly Fiorina debate, which yeah. I think those four people will be watching tonight, and yeah. maybe nobody else. But look, the thing is, you know, we keep talking about, we don't know if it's going to be Cruz number one or Donald Trump number one in Iowa or even New Hampshire. The key for the, at least for the establishment wing of the Republican Party, and who knows what that means anymore, is who finishes third? Who's going to be the alternative yeah. to Trump-Cruz or Cruz-Trump? So Marco Rubio has got to have a good showing today. But here's the thing. Marco Rubio is involved, engaged in this awful personal back and forth with Chris Christie and Jeb Bush. They're beating each other to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And while and John Kasich, too, for that matter. John Kasich is now the target of a big anti-Kasich ad in New Hampshire. They're spending $1 million on that.
Yes.
So with all these so-called establishment Republicans in this circular firing squad, it allows Trump and Cruz to go their merry way.
Well, and Howard and Ken, you know, what does this do to the people who are actually in the debate tonight? I mean, how are they going to react without Trump being there? I mean, what are they going to do with themselves?
Trump is there. Trump is there. Every
yeah,
question will be about
there.
Donald Trump.
I mean,
you know
is,
that.
He is there in the room, whether his physical presence is elsewhere. I mean, I don't care. You know, it'll suck all the air out of the room anyway.
So for better or worse, Trump is whether he's there or not, he's there.
Ken, what do you think of these polls in Iowa?
I don't know what to make of them. I think, first of all, I think we should completely ignore national polls. They mean
yes,
nothing.
They mean nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But every poll I've seen, or at least the last, well, the big one, the Fox News poll, the Quinnipiac
right.
poll in the last couple of days, both have Trump up by 2 to 4 points. Again, it's notoriously tough to poll in Iowa, especially for caucus.
Yes.
And we still say that Iowans very often make up their minds at the last minute. 4 years ago when Rick Santorum won, a lot of these people decided at the very, very last second. Now, not that Rick Santorum is going to be part of the calculation this year, but things could happen. But I still can't imagine it. I mean, I can't imagine it. Look. If Trump not showing up, first of all, the debate tonight is in Iowa. So I mean, if I wouldn't see this as a diss on them and the process by Trump, so maybe that'll have some kind of effect. But it's something to watch. Certainly.
And if they do make up their minds at the last minute, one of these candidates or more of these candidates really has an opportunity to make an impression.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think Chris Christie has been having good debates. Jeb Bush seemed a little more confident of himself, but it's remarkable, the guy with $105 million and basically all his money, or at least a lot of his money
yeah.
in the last couple of weeks, have been going to attacking Marco Rubio. So it's very bizarre. The establishment doesn't know what to do with itself. The
mm-hmm.
last time they were in this position probably was Barry Goldwater in 1964 when they were outsmarted by the conservatives. Now the establishment is just way, way behind in the outside wing of the Republican Party, and they don't know how to deal with it.
Well, now it seems like the establishment of the Republican Party is almost more willing to accept a Trump than they are a Cruz.
Because, well, that's what Bob Dole said.
Yeah,
Bob,
and
which
some
is
other
shocking
people.
To me. Yeah,
yeah, but you know, Cruz is not very popular among his Republican colleagues in the Senate.
No,
obviously.
Do you think the lower tier candidates who don't do so well in Iowa are going to stick it through to South Carolina?
Oh, that's going to weed some people out for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think Tuesday Huckabee and Santorum are gone for the race.
Right.
For the race,
yes.
I think that's as long as they'll last.
And then,
Carly Fiorina, if she lasts through New Hampshire, maybe that's about it. I don't see her moving anywhere. And Rand Paul has to make a decision too. He spent a lot of money of his own campaign to make sure that Kentucky has its own caucuses on March 5th.
Yes.
And if he's lagging in the polls, he doesn't want to go into his own state's caucuses and lose. So
yes.
I'm not convinced that Rand Paul. But you know something, if you think of the last time he was in the debate, he was one of the bright spots of the debate. It was an actual debate. The role, the proper role of the U.S. in foreign policy and the Mideast and what to do about Assad and Syria. Well, Rand Paul asked serious questions, but it's not reflected in the polls.
Yeah, you agree with him or not. I mean, he's good on his feet, and he sounds good. But yeah. I do think within a couple of weeks, this field is going to be cut in half.
Ben Carson's campaign, I have to wonder what's going on there because it seems like it's almost imploding. You know, he's got this argument going on with his top outside advisor, Armstrong Williams. He came out and said, you know, Armstrong's dishonest. And is he going to be able to keep his campaign going? Can you see that happening?
Well, you know, I mean, every time I was on your show in 2015, I said it's so ridiculous to talk about front runners. For the longest time, Scott Walker was the front runner in Iowa, then Ben Carson was the front runner. And of course, here we are in January of 2016, and neither name comes up. But Ben Carson's campaign is really, you know, what's interesting to me is that one of the reasons his campaign has suffered and declined is because he's proven himself in the debates to have a lack of understanding of the key issues. But so does Donald Trump, and that hasn't affected him.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is just rewriting the rules. I've never seen anything like it, but Carson basically is conventional. His collapse is conventional. He looks poorly. He looks bad in the debates, and he pays the price.
Yeah, and he's not the charismatic type. You know, he's not the kind that's going to attract a crowd.
How much weight though does Iowa really hold? I mean, they always say, you know, Iowa's got this great advantage. It's one of the first in the nation to hold its contests. And I just always wonder, what's the track record of people who win Iowa? Is it really that relevant?
Well, that's a very good question. But I think we could say the same thing about New Hampshire. I mean, look at the last two Republicans to win in Iowa. Last time it was Rick Santorum. Before that, it was Mike Huckabee. And of course, neither one went anywhere. My favorite story about Iowa is 1988. The ultimate nominees, Michael Dukakis and George H.W. Bush, both finished third in Iowa, and yet they went on to win the nomination. What Iowa does do, though, it winnows the field.
Yes.
We saw in 2008, the night of the Iowa caucuses, both Joe Biden and Chris Dodd dropped out of the race because they just were not viable. So they may not be the kingmaker, but they could be the king breaker.
That's very good. Yeah, no, they do not win a nomination for anybody, but they can end some candidacies very quickly.
Yep.
And we've got some folks lined up to try to answer the trivia question, so let's see if we can get a few in before the break here, Ken. Give us the question again, though.
Nelson Rockefeller has gotten more votes, cumulative votes, than any Republican running for governor in history. Third place is Jim Rhodes of Ohio. Who's in second place?
Okay, let's try Dan in Pleasant Ridge. Dan, who do you think it is?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan is a very good guess, over 7 million votes, but he's number six in terms of the most votes for governor.
See, he would have been my first guess.
Yeah.
All right, we will come back for more with Ken and Howard. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and we'll also check in to see if somebody can come up with the answer to Ken's trivia question.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper from The Splendid Table. I suspect that you're a naturally curious person. You like to learn new things, hear new music, and taste new tastes. Your sense of curiosity is an important part of who you are. And that's why this station was meant for you. Every time you listen, without having to even think about it, you hear something that expands your world and takes you to new places. Think about what that means to you and make a gift to this station today. It's your support, whether a little or a lot, that feeds your curiosity and makes this listening experience possible. Thank you.
It costs almost $12,000 a day to keep WVXU on the air, and you heard that right, $12,000 every day. Your contribution helps cover a part of that. We invite you to listen to 91.7 all year long, and right now we're asking you to help cover the cost of a small portion of one day. Make that phone call to 513-419-7155. You can also contribute online at wvxu.org or wmub.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we've got some more people lined up for the trivia question. Let's see if we can get a correct answer here. But Ken, again, would you give us that question?
Nelson Rockefeller is the Republican who got the most votes in history for running for governor, all totaled up together. Jim Rhodes of Ohio is in third place. Who is in second place?
Okay, let's see if Stan in Springboro knows the answer. Hi, Stan, what do you think it is?
Well, I had two thoughts.
Just one, though. Just one, your first thought.
Okay, I'll go with my first guess. Pete Wilson of California.
Pete Wilson, who got 8.5 million votes, is in fourth place. So that's close.
Wow.
He's right behind Jim Rhodes, but he's in fourth place. He's not number two.
Okay, Ken Howard is trying to ply me for the answer. He keeps holding up little. Is this it? Is this it? I'm not going to tell
notes.
You, Howard. I'm not going to tell you.
I know.
I've gotten in trouble before, so I'm not doing that.
One of our very intelligent listeners, I'm coming out to
Cincinnati in the near future, and
next month, yeah.
We have an event, and I'll take care of Howard because I'm tired of his whining. I'm tired of his demands.
You know what? Me too. Yeah. When you're coming in here on the 25th, you'll actually be in the studio with us on the 25th, and I just want you to put Howard in his place once and for all.
You know, when I was in Cincinnati,
many have tried.
Well,
when I came to Cincinnati last year, people never recovered from that trip.
That's true.
Right? I still haven't. Let's see if John in Covington knows the answer. John, what do you think it is?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Howard, I'll try to put you out of your misery.
Okay. All right. Thanks, John.
What do you think
of the terms preceding term limits? I'm going to go with Jerry Brown of California.
Oh, well.
Jerry Brown is a great guest, but he's a Democrat. We're looking for the Republican.
Yeah, see, John, that was one of the first things I thought of, too. But then I realized that Ken had said, oh, Republican.
All right, let's see.
There were some liberals in California who still think he's kind of a Republican. Jerry Brown is definitely a Democrat.
True.
Stephen Blue Ash, who do you think it is, Steve?
Hi, guys. And I'm actually going to give you someone who was a Republican.
Good.
How about that? George W. Bush.
Ken?
George W. Bush is a good guess, but he's not even on my radar here. No, George W. Bush is not the answer.
Okay. Let's see. Dean in Westwood. Dean, do you think you know who it is?
I believe so. Barry Goldwater.
Barry Goldwater, the great senator from Arizona, never ran for governor.
Thanks.
Okay. Nice try. Let's see here. Leo in Cincinnati. Leo, who do you think it was?
Yeah, it's George Romney from Michigan.
George Romney is a good guess, but of course Michigan doesn't have as many votes as some of these states. Maybe that's like a little clue there, but George Romney is not the answer.
Okay, Jason, who do you think it is? Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry,
okay, no problem.
So looking at timeliness here, I'm going to guess Terry Branstad of Iowa.
Terry Branstad of Iowa, who's the current governor, who has been governor longer than any other governor in history, but Iowa is such a small state, not that many votes, so it's not Terry Branstad.
Okay, so, Ken, nobody's gotten this so far. I mean, I can't believe it.
Yeah, but it's a three-hour show, so...
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
Is that like a three-hour tour? Are we coming back from this? I hate to ask you to do it again. Give us the question again, and let's see if we can get some folks lined up who might know the answer.
Nelson Rockefeller of New York received more votes, 12 million votes total in his four runs for governor of New York, more than any other Republican in history. Third place is Jim Rhodes of Ohio with nearly 9 million votes. Who is in second place of the Republicans?
If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. Howard, quit trying to get the answer out of me.
No.
We've got to stop this man. We have to somehow.
Maybe somebody gets the question right.
I got it.
Oh, okay. But if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. Just take your best guess. Just wild guesses will work, too, and you might end up being right, and the first correct answer will win a political junkie button, 419-7100.
May I ask my friend, Mr. Rudin, a question?
Yeah. Sure, not unless it has to do with the trivia question.
No.
Ken, what's the answer?
It does. It seems to me Iowa is the kind of place where you have to either have extremely devoted followers or a very, very good ground organization.
Or both.
Or both, right. And I'm looking at Trump, and I'm seeing the very, very devoted followers, but I'm not sure I'm seeing the ground game.
Well, see, that's a very good point, because a lot of the people he's been attracting to his rallies have never been involved in politics before, probably right. never attended
never been
a caucus.
To a caucus, yeah.
But he only started advertising, you know, going to on TV on January 2nd. He is making an effort. He's trying to organize more in the last few days. That is the real question. There's passion. He's drawing an immense amount of people at his rallies. Will they show up on Monday night? That's the question.
And does Cruz have that kind of ground game? I know they've been working on it, you know, and that kind of get out the vote effort. But, I mean, this is a real commitment that you make if you're going to vote in the Iowa caucuses. This is not just
explain the process so that we know exactly what's involved.
Actually, there's a big difference between the Democrats and the Republicans,
and Republicans
in Iowa.
Right. Sure.
The Republicans, you walk in, you put down your choice for president on a secret ballot, and then you leave for the most part. The Democrats, you're usually there for 5 hours. You stand there in the middle of a room and said, okay, all the Clinton supporters here, all the Bernie Sanders supporters here, and you, that one guy from Martin O'Malley, you stand over there, and right. but it's public. And then if one of the candidates doesn't have a 15% threshold to be able to get delegates down the road, then that person has to join the Sanders or Clinton campaign. So, like 8 years ago, for example, when Joe Biden only had 1% of the caucuses, it's not that only 1% of the Democrats wanted him, but because of this way of doing the caucus where you have to join a group to be viable, that's what left him with only 1%. Yeah. So it's much different with Democrats and Republicans. And neither party directly decides the delegates right away, because the delegates who are decided on Monday, then they go to a county convention, a county convention, where then they elect delegates all over again, that goes to a district convention, which elects delegates all over again to go to the state convention in June. And that's when the delegates to the national convention are awarded. And by then, there's usually only one candidate.
But the key thing is, a caucus, you actually...
Wait, did I just lose the entire audience?
The key thing, though, Ken, caucus, you have to come out and openly declare, right? Is that correct?
On the Democratic side.
It's a secret ballot on the Republican side.
Right.
More like
right.
a primary.
No, the worst thing
that's
going to happen to you at the Republican caucus is you might have to hang around for a while and listen to some speeches.
Okay.
You know, and then you cast your secret ballot.
Right.
Now, what as far as Marco Rubio goes, you know, if he really has a good debate tonight, and then he, say, ties or beats Cruz in Iowa, you see that shaking things up as we move forward?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Although I don't see that happening. I think the question is really, as I said, whatever it is between Cruz and Trump, whoever finishes third, maybe the money people in the party, the establishment, the elected officials will say, okay, let's just say, for example, it's Marco Rubio. Well, Marco Rubio is a clear third. Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, it's time for you guys to get out, because we've got to stop Paul and Cruz. I mean, I'm sorry, we got to stop Trump and Cruz, and we can't do that if we're all split among all these candidates. But there's no sign that any of those candidates are about to drop out.
Yeah. Okay, we have some more people lined up to try for the trivia question here, and let's check in with Dan and see if Dan knows the answer. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Who do you think it is, Dan?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a bad guess. He only ran twice, though. I mean, not that it matters, he only ran twice. Ronald Reagan only ran twice, but he ran twice, and he didn't get that many votes to be on this top 10 list.
Okay, let's see if Betsy in Covington knows the answer. Betsy, who do you think it is?
Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush ran twice, elected twice in Florida. Actually, he ran three times. He was elected twice and ran a third time, but he is not that's not the answer.
Okay. Doug and Ripley. Doug, who do you think it is? Yep. I guess Doug was going to be an Arnold person.
Yeah,
so
probably, yeah.
he has these hang-ups.
Yeah. Let's see Paul, who do you think it was? Okay, I guess Paul was another Arnold vote, Here. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Paul's here.
Okay, Paul.
I was an Arnold person, but Arnold is not right, so I'm going to go Rick Perry.
Okay.
Rick Perry's not a bad guess, but he's only number 7 on the list with 7 million votes.
Okay, nobody has gotten this thing. This is the most diabolical trivia question you've ever thrown out there, Ken. I mean, it's just absolutely got everybody stumped.
I think I have it.
But still looking for an answer. I think we'll have to call this one by the next break, but if we don't have a right answer. But we're still looking for a correct answer, 513-419-7100. If you're right, think about it. You win a political junkie button. Life does not get any better than that.
Can I give a hint?
Sure.
I never give hints.
Well, you offered one.
I'm saying I never in the past have I given hints, but I will tell you, this person is not, well, I'll put it this way. He's no longer still alive. In other words, this happened in the not very distant past, but not in the current.
Yes.
Okay. Not a Pete Wilson, Rick Perry kind of person.
Right. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Okay. Thanks for the help, Ken.
It
helps a little bit. So
it gives me hope.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, quit it, Howard. I'm trying to get the answer out of me.
I got two names here.
You know,
yes, Howard Wilkinson.
Howard Wilkinson. And looking at the Iowa caucuses, how crucial is it going to be for Ted Cruz? How crucial is this going to be for Bernie Sanders? I mean, how much do they need wins here?
Well, that's interesting, too, because, I mean, until this week, it seems like Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side has taken a slight lead in Iowa, and Bernie Sanders had been closing the gap for a while. Of course, she had a huge lead a while ago, and Bernie Sanders still leads in New Hampshire. If Bernie Sanders were to win in Iowa and New Hampshire, well, then all the questions about Hillary Clinton's inevitability would come into focus again. But having said that, the fact is that Hillary Clinton does very well among Latino voters, and following Iowa and New Hampshire is Nevada, where there are a lot of Hispanic voters. And she does very well with African-American voters. Right. And then, you know, South Carolina and the March 1st Super Tuesday primaries are coming. And so even if she loses Iowa and New Hampshire, that doesn't mean she's doomed for the nomination. Of course, if she wins both, that might accelerate the process. But in fairness, go back to 1992. Bill Clinton didn't win any of the first four contests: Iowa, New Hampshire, Maine, and South Dakota. You remember the Maine, Maine and South Dakota. That's four states, and yet he wound up winning the nomination when he won Georgia in the fifth state. But so you can even lose four contests and still go on to win the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, losing Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, would not look great for Hillary. But it's like Ken says, the upcoming schedule is very, very much in her favor.
But no Republican has ever won the nomination after having lost Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess, too, Ken, it's not just getting the win. It's what you do after you get the win. It's how you use the momentum from that going forward, isn't it?
And you just described Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee in Iowa. They won, and yet they did well in some conservative states, but not enough to propel them to the nomination.
Sanders is interesting in Iowa, just in that he seems to have a lot of young people behind him. Enthusiasm. I mean, there's potential for an upset there if he can get
him out to the
caucus sites.
And it's interesting, you know, I think Hillary Clinton does very, very well in the debates, but one of the arguments, one of the unhappiness about the process among the Bernie Sanders supporters is that there have been so limited, you know, relatively few debates this cycle, and the O'Malley and the Sanders people say, well, the DNC is in cahoots with the Hillary Clinton campaign, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the DNC has to go. But I don't know why Hillary Clinton has been battling these debates, why the campaign would like to limit the number of debates, because she's a very good debater. She's strong on her feet. She gives as much as she gets. They're not as entertaining as the Republicans because they don't throw pies, but it's still good stuff.
Well, the other problem with the Democratic debates is that they've been at such odd times and, that they haven't gotten the wide audience.
Well, last week, I don't know if you know this, last week, the Democratic debate was airing on at 4 o'clock in the morning on the Glockenspiel channel. I don't know why everybody didn't tune in for that.
What is that, channel 1000 something
it
or
is.
Other? Okay.
Well, yeah, it's public
access. It's not
access.
Basic cable.
Right.
It's not basic cable, no.
Satellite only, I think.
Right.
We've got some more folks lined up here, Ken. Let's see if we can get an answer here. Let's
I think
try.
We've named every Republican in history so far.
I think we have. Well, not quite. We might have a few surprises here. Let's see if David knows the answer. David, who do you think it is?
Hello.
Hello. Go right ahead. What do you think the answer is?
Okay, my guess is George Dukmajian.
George Dukmajian is a good guess, but not. He's not in the top 10.
Okay, let's see. Is it Conrad? Is that it?
Yeah, Conrad. I was going to say Chris Christie.
Okay.
Chris Christie won twice in New Jersey, but again, New Jersey doesn't have as many votes as some of the bigger states. I'll give you another hint. Think of the big states, and a lot of these guesses have been the big states, but think of the big states because that's where most of the votes come from.
Yes.
It's not Chris Christie.
Yes.
Well, let's give Al a try. Let's see if Al knows the answer.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Thomas Dewey.
Thomas Dewey is the correct answer.
All right.
Congratulations, Al. Way to go.
What does that say?
I know you. Thomas Dewey is what he wrote on, Howard has
he
written
did,
on his
really?
Sheet.
He did?
He did. Yes, he did.
Yes, I did. Well, Al is correct.
I begrudgingly admit that. That's
excellent.
Good, Al.
Very good.
Excellent.
Al.
Hang on the line, Al. We will get the information on where we can send your prize to. But good job, and thank you for putting Ken out of his, or not Ken, but Howard out of his misery.
Well, we had a whole lot of people calling today on this.
Yeah,
well,
we did.
Yeah,
was
that was a great trivia question. Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't mention any of Dewey's two brothers.
Okay.
Where's Frank Lausche? Where's Frank Lausche on that list?
No, I was thinking of Huey and Louie, but but. Well,
oh,
you know,
please.
One of the reasons the answer was Thomas Dewey is back in the day, the New York governor race was every 2 years.
That's right.
So Dewey ran more often than most.
Exactly.
We will continue our conversation with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
I'm Krista Tippett with On Being. My life is enriched by the conversations I have every week and that I'm proud to share on public radio. And your sustaining donation makes this programming possible. Continue to make a difference. Consider increasing your monthly donation, and thank you for your support.
You'll hear something interesting anytime you listen to 91.7 or 88.5. And if you made a contribution to help support the station this year, thank you so very much. If not, Howard Wilkinson and I would love to hear from you right now. Give us a call, 513-419-7155 is the number to call to make your contribution. We have volunteers waiting to take that call. You can also give online at wvxu.org or wmub.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and we're talking politics with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. And you can join us, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Found out something interesting about Al, who got the right answer, Ken, and it kind of is revealing.
Yeah.
He's from Syracuse, New York. He called in from Syracuse. He thought Dewey
really?
Was a good guess.
Yeah. Well, that's
he was also a great decimal system.
Yeah.
Yes. Mark, can I talk about something that's above my pay grade? But I want
sure.
to add something because we, you know, of course, the listeners have always been interrupted by these funding.
Oh, and I have to
requests,
I have to correct myself real quick here. Al is originally from New York, but he's now living here.
From.
So,
okay.
So my sorry, Al. Okay.
Go ahead,
Ken.
But this is so important. I mean, shows like Cincinnati Edition, which, I mean, as much as I love, I know that it's a big expense of putting on the show, paying Howard the outlandish salary he gets.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
It's unbelievable.
And the personal limo and the maid and all that stuff.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And paying me to give him the answers in advance to the trivia questions. The point is, and I'm being silly here, but I'm being serious now.
Yeah.
It is so important. These shows could not exist without the VXU listeners. So I am so thankful that you have the kind of audience and the community that you do.
Yes, and I mean, we need every person out there listening to help us keep putting on this kind of programming.
And the number again to make that contribution is 513-419-7155. And if you want to contribute online, it's a quick way to make a contribution. Yes. It's very safe and easy. And that's you can do that at WVXU.org or at WMUB.org.
You make the checks payable to H. Wilkinson.
other outrageous
demand.
That won't
be necessary, no.
No.
One thing I was thinking about was, I guess it was yesterday, Wednesday, President Obama had a little chin wag at the White House with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Well, because President Obama had this interview with Glenn Thrush of Politico the other day. And everything that came out of it sounded like he was praising Hillary Clinton for everything. I mean, just, you know, Hillary Clinton is her process and her views and her campaign and her supporters. So a lot of people took that as a tacit, although not a committed endorsement. And of course, the Bernie Sanders people went nuts. Bernie Sanders requested the meeting with the president. They met for 45 minutes. Bernie came out and said the president and the vice president are truly non-committed, uncommitted between the two of us, and that's the way it should be.
Well, yeah, and the president obviously wanted to send that message out that, okay, you know, I don't have a horse in this race.
Although I think he does.
Well, of course he does.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and there's so many people who are very close advisors to him and very close to him politically who are active in Hillary Clinton's campaign.
And Bernie Sanders, for all his strengths, he's not. I mean, he can be a rabble rouser. He is not a member of the Democratic caucus. He's an independent in the Senate,
right.
And he's taken on the president and the Democrats as much as he's taken on the Republicans because he's very passionate about the things that concerns him. So, if you believe if you want to fight income inequality, if you hate. You abhor the rise of the differences between the rich and the poor. Well, you know, Barack Obama has been president the last 7 years, and some things haven't changed in that. So he takes on both parties, and
he is a true independent voice.
Yeah, not every Democrat loves him, that's for sure.
Right.
What do you think of Hillary embracing what, you know, Barack Obama and a lot of his policies? She seems to be doing kind of it seemed like at one point she was distancing herself, and now she's saying, well, I fully agree with what he's done. He's done great.
Well, most of that is on guns, and of course, every time she mentions guns, it's an obvious slap at Bernie Sanders, who does not have the strongest pro-gun control record, coming from gun-loving Vermont. And you know, you could make the case that when he was first elected to the House in 1990, Bernie Sanders was elected with support from the NRA. Now he has stood up to the NRA, but he's voted against the Brady Bill, for example. He was in a kind of lukewarm on the ban on assault weapons for a while, and so Hillary Clinton likes to point that out. Of course, at the same time, Bernie Sanders likes to point out that the mess that's going on in the Mideast and everything that's going on with ISIS and Syria and all that, well, maybe that happened because of the war in Iraq, and I, Bernie Sanders, voted against that war in 2002, and you, Hillary Clinton, voted for it. So these are clear differences between the two, and we'll see what happens on Monday.
Yeah, what do you make of this, too? There was some talk. Howard, you're a little bit more informed on this about President Obama possibly being a Supreme Court nominee. I thought that came from Hillary's side.
Well, I believe it came out of one of her campaign rallies. Somebody had asked her about it. You know, would President Obama be considered for a Supreme Court appointment if you were elected president? She said, oh, my goodness, I hadn't thought of that. That's a wonderful idea, you know. And then she kind of toned it down a little bit and said, but, you know, well, there's probably going to be several appointments and it's going to be a difficult confirmation process in the Senate. And you know, but, I mean, obviously she didn't commit to that. Nobody is going to. And the president himself has said, well, I don't know, you know, if I want to be tied down to that kind of job after I get out of office.
I thought it was pretty remarkable when Donald Trump said he would appoint one of his Twitter followers to the Supreme Court. I didn't expect him to say that.
Well, you know, I think Fox and its response to Trump jilting them, I think Fox's response kind of poked fun at him. Saying that the cabinet would be made up of his Twitter followers or something along those lines.
You know something? One thing we haven't mentioned is Michael Bloomberg and the possibility of him running as an independent or third party candidate.
Well, and why is it, now my impression, Ken, was he's doing this because he doesn't like a Hillary Clinton candidacy, but he doesn't like Donald Trump candidacy, so he's saying I have to insert myself into this. Is that his big reason for doing this?
Well, I think it's actually he probably dislikes Bernie Sanders even more because Michael Bloomberg is a creature of Wall Street, and Bernie Sanders has spent the entire campaign attacking Wall Street. Now, Bloomberg also was, in fairness, is not a fan of Hillary Clinton's controversies and ethics questions, and he's concerned about that. But he's also extremely concerned about the rise of Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, as are many Republicans, and he's trying to, you know, I mean, look, he's 73 years old. He has thrown out these hints before, but maybe this is his last chance. But maybe this time there really is, there could be a crying out for a center if, you know, if lightning strikes, Bernie Sanders is the nominee on the left and Ted Cruz and or Trump on the right, and there's a wide middle to take advantage of. Maybe he's the guy, but look, you know, even if he could spend $1 billion, we know that independent third party candidates, what they do is maybe they hurt one candidate, like, you know, Ralph Nader did with Al Gore, or Ross Perot did with George H.W. Bush, or even John Anderson
with Carter.
Jimmy Carter. Yeah. But they don't get elected themselves.
No, they don't. They raise certain issues and force the major party candidates to talk about them. But they don't win races. Now, you know, Bloomberg's talked about this before.
Right.
But you think this might be a little bit different because of the...
Ultimately, I think he doesn't do it. I think I just think he knows that the chances of getting elected are just between slim and none. Yeah. But again, given what Bernie Sanders has said in the past about guns, what all the Republicans say about guns, and guns being a very important issue for Bloomberg, he theoretically could see himself being the sane gun champion or gun control champion in the middle. But again, as you say, you know,
can't win.
Ross Perot spent $60 million on his campaign in 1992, got zero electoral votes for his work. And I think, you know, it's hard to make the case that an independent could win.
Yeah, Bloomberg could self-fund and spend even more, but... It would still
win. Don't we need another New York divorced billionaire in the race? We can't just have one.
Yeah, that aside, whether it might be Bloomberg or it might be somebody else, what do you think are the chances that we might see an independent candidate or a third party candidate running this? Because it just seems like there's so much dissatisfaction in both parties with the choices they have.
I'm convinced that if it's Trump or Cruz, there will be some kind of a Republican who's from the middle who will just, you know, run, or he'll get in the race. But all that would do is split the Republican vote and help the Democrats. But I guess if there's such distaste for Cruz or Trump, it really doesn't matter if the end result is Hillary Clinton.
You think Ted Cruz can catch up with Donald Trump?
Well, that's a good question, because yes, he has the strong evangelical support in Iowa, which is crucial. But there's no such thing as evangelical support in New Hampshire. It's more of a moderate state, more of a free market conservative state. But then comes the South. Then comes March 1st, South Carolina. First South Carolina, then March 1st in Texas, Virginia, Tennessee, Alabama. And Cruz has been campaigning there very strong for a long time. And he does have conservative Tea Party support there. But, boy, it's just so wide open. But Iowa and New Hampshire, while they may not decide who wins, boy, if Trump wins both, or if it's just Trump and Cruz, it's going to be hard to stop them.
Yeah.
How much do you think Rick Perry's endorsement helps Ted Cruz?
None. It's like when Lindsey Graham endorsed Jeb Bush. I mean, it's just I don't think.
I don't think it helps that much. I mean,
When Terry Branstad, the governor of Iowa, says I do not want Ted Cruz, that could mean something.
That could mean something. Yes. Yeah. That could be, and especially with some other Republican figures in Iowa kind of warming up to Trump, in a strange
way. The most amazing endorsement of the week, I thought, was Jerry Falwell Jr., given Donald Trump's history of of you know, marital vows. I mean,
right.
And it's hard to even describe where he's been on that. The fact that Jerry Falwell's son would endorse Donald Trump is just remarkable. Everything is remarkable to me.
Right.
Hey, speaking of Jeb Bush, how in the world can Jeb Bush keep going at this point?
I don't see it. I mean, he's raised so much money. He was you know, almost given the nomination on a platter. He's just not a good campaigner. He's smart, but he talks in, he doesn't even talk in paragraphs. He talks in pages. You know, it's just,
yeah.
And he doesn't know what a soundbite is. And he always looks so tentative when he's fighting, you know, battling with Donald Trump. He's not going to have that in tonight's debate. Maybe that's to his advantage because he never seems to feel comfortable in his battles with Trump. Maybe he'll shine, but it's hard to come from 2% to any kind of victory with just days to go before Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah, there comes a point where the Republican establishment just basically looks at him and says, sorry, we can't give any more. You know, the money will dry up and he'll have to go away.
Right. And it'll certainly dry up if he finishes in fourth or fifth or sixth in the next two states, right?
So what are you expecting to see in the debates tonight, Ken?
Perhaps a livelier Marco Rubio. He kind of does a lot of things by almost like he's memorized it, but he's smart. He's good. I think Ted Cruz can have fun without Donald Trump. If Marco Rubio is the alternative to the outsiders, you're going to see a lot of attacks on Rubio. If Ted Cruz is seen as the front runner, you'll see attacks on Cruz. And Rand Paul will say, hey, don't forget me, I'm still here.
What about Kasich? What do you think? Is he going to make an impression on anybody?
You know, he's picked up a bunch of endorsements lately. He's gotten some, especially in New Hampshire.
Yes.
Again, he's one of those three or four or five establishment guys, but I just think that his record, you know, his record on Medicare support and Common Core stuff, the things that have hurt Jeb Bush all this time, doesn't work in John Kasich's favor either in a party that's so conservative.
So you were saying you're expecting after Iowa things are going to start getting tighter, after New Hampshire things are going to start getting tighter. How big's the political, the Republican side of the field going to end up being, do you think?
Well, as I say, I think Tuesday Santorum and Huckabee could be gone. I won't see an argument for Fiorina after maybe New Hampshire. And then what does Ben Carson do? He has money. He still has some support. But if it's just clearly a downward spiral, then I don't see the purpose of staying in.
And I think after New Hampshire, you cut it in half, basically.
Yeah.
Well, Ken and Howard,
thank
you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It was great.
And, you know, normally, Ken, you join us on a special phone line, but we're actually going to see you in person in Cincinnati next month. I just can't wait for that.
Right here in this chair next to
me. Yeah, but I'm still bringing the phone line because I am so good-looking on the radio.
And I anxiously await you putting Howard in his place
I have your chair sitting right here.
Keep him in check.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're looking forward to seeing you on next month's show. You'll be joining us in studio on the 25th, Ken. Thanks.
Great.
Thank you.